So today's verse is Canto 8, Chapter 5, Text 45. Satvam no dashat mananam. Satvam no darshayat manam. Satvam no darshayat manam. Asmat karana gocharam. Prapananam didrikshunam. Shashmitam te mukham bhujam. Satvam nadashayatmanam. Satvam nadashayatmanam. Asmat karana gocharam. Asmat karana gocharam. Prapananam didrikshunam. Prapananam didrikshunam. Sashmitam te mukham bhujam. Translation. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are surrendered unto you, yet we wish to see you. Please make your original form and smiling lotus face visible to our eyes and appreciable by our other senses. Please repeat. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are surrendered unto you, yet we wish to see you. Please make your original form and smiling lotus face visible to our eyes and appreciable to our other senses. Purport. The devotees are always eager to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His original form, with His smiling, lotus-like face. They are not interested in experiencing the impersonal form. The Lord has both impersonal and personal features. The impersonalists have no idea of the personal feature of the Lord. But Lord Brahma and the members of His disciplic succession want to see the Lord in His personal form. Without a personal form, there can be no question of a smiling face, which is clearly indicated here by the words Sashmitam te mukham bhujam. Those who are in the Vaishnava Sampradaya of Lord Brahma always want to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are eager to realize the Lord's personal feature, not the Lord's impersonal feature. As clearly stated here, Asmat Karana Gocharam. The personal feature of the Lord can be directly perceived by our senses. So this is a very nice verse. When I arrived here in Mumbai, I was asked if I could give class, and I was given the number for the class that was yesterday, and I was given this verse yesterday. And then Prabhu rang up and said, actually it's the verse before, and this verse is today. So when I looked up this verse, text 45, for the class yesterday, I found that this was a very wonderful verse. And because I hadn't been in the practice for a while, some time, of giving any classes, so I felt a little inadequate to speak on this verse. And so I took Srila Prabhupada's Veda base, his collected lectures and everything on the computer. And something very nice to do if you have sort of some time to waste, time pass, is you put into the Veda base something, and then you click a search, and you come up with everything Srila Prabhupada has said on that subject. Now, if you put in an ordinary, if you put in a word, like you put in a word like Krishna, obviously not an ordinary word, you will find that Prabhupada has said thousands and thousands of times this word. And so you can't possibly go through all of the list that comes up 10,000 times Srila Prabhupada has used this word, Krishna. But if you put in a little phrase, then you get more specific. So I put in a little phrase, and the phrase was, where is it now? Seeing the Lord, wanting to see the Lord. So I put in this phrase, and then only about 5 or 6, maybe 10 times Srila Prabhupada used those specific words in that order. He may have said sometime, want to see Krishna, or he may have said, want to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the limitation of the computer means that it can only hand you back what you asked it for. So I asked it for a certain phrase, and Srila Prabhupada didn't use that phrase in that form extensively. So then when I clicked by the computer to find out where were the references where he used it, funnily enough, the third reference was this verse, which of course was the one I had come from. I ended up going all the way around and back to this very same verse where Srila Prabhupada speaks about this, wishing to see Krishna. And so looking at the verse a little further, I thought, well, that was useful, but it didn't give me any further information. It started me back where I came from, with this beautiful verse spoken by Lord Brahma. So just like we read in the third canto, that when Lord Brahma finds himself at the beginning of his secondary creation, he finds himself alone on a lotus flower in a very turbulent ocean, tossing backwards and forwards. And you can just imagine if you were to find yourself in such a isolated and precarious and ununderstandable condition. So he finds himself on this lotus flower, surrounded by water and alone. So just like us human beings who are very resourceful, when we find ourselves in a difficult situation, what do? Of course, we take shelter of our intelligence and we sit there and think, now what am I going to do about this? How can I find out what should be done here? And we call on our reserves of intellect. So Lord Brahma, who has the fullest power of intelligence, he looked here and there and tried to study the situation. And then he decided that what he could do would be, he could find his source by going down the stem of the lotus. Because there was nothing else there, just the lotus. The lotus had a stem and he was there. So he dove into the water and he proceeded in this way, using his intelligence to go down the stem of the lotus. And Srila Prabhupada explains that he came to a point of intense fear, when he tried to find his origin. Because it's like if you take some tiny insect and they're flying around the room and they see a fire and they think, yes, this will be very exciting for me. I want to experience this. And they come towards the fire. Now you can imagine, were that insect to have human intelligence, there must be a moment when that insect is going at a great speed towards the fire that they start to feel incredibly hot. And after the heat that they feel, the next experience is going to be destruction. Because that fire is going to burn them to pieces. So that small insect trying to work out, what is this, what is this, what is this, what is this, oh, look at this, and going towards the fire, is going to meet with his own destruction. So when we try to work out everything through our intelligence, where do I come from? Where am I going? What am I going to do with my life? How can I get this? How can I get that? How can I solve this problem? How can I gain more and more and reduce this and so on and so forth? So the Prabhupada says, this is actually the process of struggle for existence that goes on within the material world. Everyone is doing that. And we as devotees also tend to do that too. We tend to make our own arrangements for our own safety. But when Lord Brahma did that, he didn't find himself feeling more and more safe, more and more secure. He found himself feeling more and more frightened. And so that fear deterred him. And instead he came up again. He came up and he sat down again in the position that he was trying to avoid. And as he was sitting there, he heard two syllables. And these syllables, as we know, were the sound of the Lord giving him the clue to what he should do. And he listened to them. And when he listened to them, they penetrated through his material intelligence, through his material mind, through his sensory activities, restlessness. They penetrated through to his spiritual intelligence. And those two words indicated to him that he had to do some purification. He had to purify his consciousness. And so because he was so intelligent, it wasn't that he rejected his own intelligence, but because he was so intelligent, he connected his intelligence to this instruction. And when he received this instruction, he followed it. And because he's the most perfect living being in the whole of the universe, he followed it excellently well. And as a result of following that instruction, the Lord actually appeared to him once his intelligence had become purified. So Srila Prabhupada, many, many, many times, he tells us that you can see Krishna. You can see Krishna everywhere. If you listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures, which are very, very nice to hear, especially his Bhagavad Gita lectures, because he goes very systematically, verse by verse. And many of those lectures were given in the early days. And so therefore he's speaking simply for these newcomer beginner devotees who are trying to grasp his concepts. And so he gives them again and again and again. And even though we may be very old and experienced persons in this world, we may be from this culture, and so we have these concepts somewhere already impregnated into our psyche. Or we may have been practicing devotional service for some time, and so we already understand the different sayings and ideas that Srila Prabhupada has introduced into our way of thinking. Even if we're one of those type of people, still we'll gain so much by listening to Srila Prabhupada speaking in this very simple, practical way. And he speaks, especially when he's introducing Bhagavad Gita chapter 7. You know, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, there's a very important verse. Now, I'm not a scholar, so I can't repeat to you the Sanskrit, and nor can I repeat to you the exact translation. But from listening to Srila Prabhupada, this is the verse that he lectured on most. Anywhere in the world, I think there are 22 lectures on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 1. And I think in some places he lectured in one place on many verses. So there are many lectures in London. There are many lectures in New York. There are many lectures in Los Angeles. And there are many lectures in San Francisco. But this verse, he has lectured on at least 15 times in different places all over the world. In Fiji, in Auckland, in Melbourne, in Sydney, in Bombay, you name it, he's lectured on that verse in that particular place. Because this verse, it seems, must have been a particular favorite of his. And what is Krishna telling Arjuna in that verse? He's telling Arjuna, now listen very carefully, and I will explain to you the process by which you can see me. And by this process, you will become free of doubt. Imagine being free of doubt. We can't imagine. It's inconceivable. Free of doubt. Just imagine that our mind wouldn't have to, it wouldn't wander so much. And we wouldn't have to bring it back all the time. And we wouldn't have to struggle with it. And we wouldn't have to sort of like every day say, okay, here we are, we're going to do this again. We would just be completely calm and clear, like a very still pond of water that has no turbulence whatsoever. And Srila Prabhupada's consciousness is like that. He has no turbulence whatsoever because he's free of doubt. Because he can see Krishna. And he wants us to see Krishna too. And he wants us to see Krishna now. Not to wait and say, oh, when I become a very advanced devotee, which I don't know when that will be, but maybe one day, then I can see Krishna. And also we can say, oh yes, I can see Krishna now, I can see Radha Gopinath, I can see Krishna now, what is the difficulty? But can you see how Gopinath is talking to the gopis? Can you see what they're doing? Can you see his movements? Does he wink at you? Can you see? Can you really see him? Or do you see stone? And you worship the stone because you've been instructed to do this as a process in order to see Krishna. So if you can't see him smiling at you, then you should say, I am yet imperfect in my seeing of Krishna, even when I see him in his deity form. And therefore, I need to see him still. Even though I can come into the temple very easily, I can stand before the deities, I can do so many things, I'm still very deficit. I'm very needy still. I'm actually very much in need of help. So, back to the demigods. The demigods have come with Lord Brahma because they want something. Well, that's sort of not so different from us. We've also come because we want something. Maybe we want some peace. Maybe we want some sort of stability in our life. Maybe we want to do something good. Maybe we've come out of fear. I don't want to do something bad. Just like Arjuna, when he was hesitating to fight, he gave different reasons why he didn't want to fight. He didn't just say, I don't want to do it. He said, here, I don't want to do it for this reason. It might send me to hell. I don't want to do it because I won't be able to enjoy with my family. I don't want to do it because I'm not sure if it's right. Neither you know nor I know if it is right that we should have this fight. So Arjuna gave various reasons why he didn't want to do it. Similarly, we have various reasons why we are becoming devotees. Positive reasons and selfish reasons as well. But we want to extend beyond that. We want to do as Lord Brahma did and purify our consciousness. And by purifying our consciousness, Srila Prabhupada, on one of those lectures, and if anyone wants to do themselves the greatest possible favor they can do, they should get some kind of machine that allows you to play lectures. And you should just listen and listen and listen to Srila Prabhupada, starting at the first one and going right through all of those chapter 7 lectures. And if you do that, it will take you a couple of days at least, if you're steadily listening. But when you do that, it's a very refreshing, very purifying experience. Because Srila Prabhupada is a samsayam. He's free of doubt or fear. And so when you touch that, it's so comforting. It's so totally reassuring to touch that. It's like being in a dark room and you can't see anything. And then there's a light. And you see the light. And you just focus on that light. And you walk. And you still have to be careful. There might be something you will trip on. But you just keep your eye and your mind on that light. There's light coming from there. So Srila Prabhupada's consciousness is full of light. And the world around us, if you haven't noticed, which I'm sure you have, is full of darkness. And it's very glittering. And it's very sophisticated. Because Krishna's material energy is Devi Guna. You cannot actually surmount his Devi Guna. It's his energy. And so if we don't want to see him, if we don't have a developed desire to see him, he will mercifully allow us to see that. And if we say, I don't want to see this anymore, I want to see you, he will equally mercifully allow you to see him. Because he's full of mercy. And he's giving us whatever we have. The doubts we have and the illumination that we have are coming from him. I am seated in everyone's heart. From me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. From me, from Krishna. So we should understand that we desperately need to see him. We desperately need to see him. If we don't see him, there is no function or meaning to our lives, actually. We're like screws. You pull them out of the computer. Somebody comes to fix your computer and they do many things. And then when they finish, you find there's 5 or 6 screws left out and you feel very worried. They weren't there before. Where did they come from? Somehow they've become disassociated from the computer. And so those screws in themselves, they're of no value. Likewise ourselves. But if those screws were somewhere in my computer, I'm sure they had a good value. And perhaps the computer won't even work in the same way with the absence of those screws. So Srila Prabhupada tells us that you can see Krishna. You can see Krishna everywhere. He says, just purify your consciousness. Just purify your consciousness and you will be able to see Krishna in everything. He says, Krishna is the earth, Krishna is the water, Krishna is the fire, Krishna is the air, Krishna is the ether, Krishna is everything, and Krishna is the spirit as well, the soul as well. Krishna is everything and everywhere. So why can't we see him? Well, we may have our various reasons. We may be reluctant, distracted, doubtful. So many reasons. We may have cataracts. We may have to go to Varshana and have our cataracts removed. But whatever the reason is, we have the capacity to see him as souls. And whatever the reason of the obstacle or obstruction is, Srila Prabhupada was determined that we should still continue with the process of uncovering our normal vision, our normal sight. And by developing that, then we would become complete and whole. So here the demigods are asking, please, we want to see you. Lord Brahma is asking very nicely and very devotedly. Yet he has some motivation. His motivation comes out further. And of course, this is a leela. And the Lord wants this leela. He's going to appear and he's going to tell them what to do, the devas, because he wants to churn the ocean of milk. He will enjoy in this way and the devas are his servants. But still, for our understanding, Srila Prabhupada sometimes explains that they had some material reason. There was a reason they wanted to see him. They wanted something. Whereas, you might have noticed when we sing the Dhammadharasthikam, there's something very similar here, that Satyarajmuni is also asking to see the Lord. He says in the fourth verse, I simply wish that this form of yours as Bala Gopal in Vrindavan may ever be manifest in my heart. For what is the use to me of any other boon beside this? Now, when somebody is offering a prayer, they have to have some feeling. If they don't have feeling, the prayer will be kind of mechanical. Just like if somebody is calling you, and they're calling, excuse me, and somebody else is calling, come over here. You'll disregard the one who's giving the faint kind of, timid kind of a, and you'll go for the person who's calling you. So when we pray, we're meant to be talking to Krishna. We're calling Him. And so this prayer is so powerful, this Dhammadharashtakam prayer. And it's so powerful. Just see, Srila Rupa Goswami has placed it in our sadhana at the most important time of the whole year, the Dhammadhar month. We sing this particular bhajan. So yesterday we were talking about Maharaj Indradyumna, who became the elephant Gajendra, and how he was saved because he learnt some mantras very perfectly. If you ever want to be saved by learning of mantras, learn this one. This is so powerful, this Dhammadharashtakam. So first in the fourth verse, he's praying, but he's not yet at his height, just like he's not yet right there yet. He's praying, he's very earnest, but he goes higher and higher and higher in his prayer. It's natural. This is how the human emotion evolves. So here he's praying, please manifest yourself in my heart. This is the only thing I want. I don't want anything else. I don't want any boons. I don't want this, I don't want that. I don't want anything. I just want you to manifest in this form of Bala Gopal in my heart. But he continues. He describes in the fifth verse the beautiful vision that he wants in his heart. Still he's talking about in his heart. But now in the sixth verse, he says, O Supreme Godhead, I offer my obeisances unto you. O Damodar, O Ananta, O Vishnu, O Master, O my Lord, be pleased with me. This is the first thing. Be pleased with me. How is he going to be pleased with us if we have no interest in him? So we have to hear about him. If we don't hear about him, how will we develop our love for him? And how will we please him? It's not very hard to please somebody if you love them. But it's very difficult to please somebody if you have a very distant relationship with them and you don't know them very well. You may not even be interested in them. But first he says, be pleased with me. By showering your glance of mercy upon me. He's asking something from the Lord. But he's not asking for something unconstitutional. He's not asking, as he said earlier, I don't want any benedictions, I don't want impersonal liberation, I don't want any money, I don't want anything like that. But I want this, that you will shower your glance of mercy upon me and deliver this poor, ignorant fool. So here is something. We have to learn to feel like a poor, ignorant fool. Oh dear. Material psychology, which is going on out there, it will be telling you something quite opposite than that. It will be telling you that you should feel good about yourself. You should feel that you have the power to do anything. You just have to take this course, study this book, listen to this teacher. He'll teach you how you can, the power of positive thinking, the power of this, that, and so on. But we should understand that all these tools that are being sold out there, they're only useful for material life. They're not useful for spiritual life. Because for spiritual life, we have to feel like we're a fool. We have to feel like a fool. The question may be asked, does that mean that we should have low self-esteem? we should feel. Perhaps when I feel like a fool, I sink down into a feeling of great unhappiness and I don't pray to Krishna. And the answer is no, that's not what's being requested here. But you have to feel your own position in relationship to everything and you will feel like a fool. Never mind all the foolish little things you do day to day. Prabhupada says, never mind the problems that everyone is immersed in of eating and sleeping and mating and defending. Those are little things. But what about your death? Your death is coming soon. What about old age? Do you think that old age is nice? Do you think it's nice when your back is aching all the time? Do you think it's nice when your body starts to stiffen up and your teeth start to fall out and your eyesight starts to get weak? Do you think it's nice on your deathbed? So then, if you're not thinking of these things and depending on Krishna for your solution, then you are a fool. So you should think, yes, I'm a fool. I'm not doing very well with my life because I'm not preparing myself not to have to suffer again. So Prabhupada, he was very fond of calling people rascals. And it was at first, I remember when I was a young devotee, I thought he was very harsh. He kept calling this person a rascal and that one a rascal, and I felt I was a rascal as well. But I've come to understand that I am a rascal and we are rascals. And if we feel this foolishness of our own, we're fortunate. We're so fortunate if we get a feeling of our own foolishness. Because then we can pray this particular prayer. We can offer this prayer. And what does he say? Please deliver this poor, ignorant fool who is immersed in an ocean of worldly sorrows and become visible to my eyes. To my eyes. I want to see you. I want to see you with my eyes. And Prabhupada says you can. But we have to become purified. There is a process. And we accept that process with this desire that I want to see Krishna in this life. I want to see Krishna. And Krishna has satisfied every other desire we've ever had. And that's why we are where we are now. Now, if we get this desire, I want to see you, he will also satisfy that. He promises. And Srila Prabhupada, on his behalf, also promises to us too. Krishna will allow you to see him. The next verse, the seventh verse of Adamadharastikam, is a very powerful verse as well. O Lord Damodar, just as the two sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nalakuvera, were delivered from the curse of Narada and made into great devotees by you, in your form of a baby tied with rope. In the same way, please give me your own prema bhakti. I only long for this, and I have no desire for what? I have no desire for any other kind of liberation. Now this is also very interesting, because mostly, most of the time, most of us are seeking some kind or another of liberation, constantly. This is what the struggle of existence is about. I want to get out of this situation. I want to get out of that situation. I'm not so satisfied with this. Maybe I can come up. Maybe I can do this. Maybe this would help. We want to become liberated from some sort of difficulty or another. But he's come to the realization that that's not what he wants. He doesn't want liberation. He wants love. He wants love. And recently, one person I was speaking to told me they had a cat. And they were describing what it was like to take care of a cat and how many things they had learned from the relationship they developed with the little cat. And they explained that they sometimes would mistreat the cat and push the cat away, but the cat would continuously come back. But the cat also had its needs, and once it had been fed, it would go away. It wasn't an unconditional loving experience with the pet. But at one point this person said to me, but the cat would put up with everything that I did to it because the cat wanted love. And I stopped for a minute when I heard him say that, and I thought about that. And then he said, I guess everyone wants love. Now, Srila Prabhupada would give us an explanation of that by explaining that, yes, every soul wants love. It's inherent in the nature of the soul to want love. And depending on the type of body that the soul is occupying and how covered the consciousness is, depends what that living being equates as love. But it's natural, we want love. And so here in this prayer, he's asking for something very extraordinary. He's just said, I'm a poor, ignorant fool. But he's asking for the same quality of prema bhakti that was given to the sons of Kuvera. And how did they get it? How did they get it? What were they doing? Were they doing devotional sadhana? No. They were acting very shockingly. They were acting very improperly. They were misbehaving. But then Narada saw them. And seeing their misbehavior, he cursed them. But his curse was such that as a result of accepting that curse or punishment or purification, they would become purified. And then they would receive this prema bhakti. And Krishna is tied up. He's bound. He's not liberated. He's tied up to a grinding mortar. And he's thinking, I am liberating these two sons of Kuvera from being trees. But look at me. I'm still bound up to the grinding mortar by my mother's love. So this is how Krishna consciousness works. It's a binding of love and it's a liberation from materialism. A liberation from impersonalism. A liberation from the material intelligence and all it supplies to us, lifetime after lifetime. And it's a surrender as a poor, ignorant fool saying, please, like Lord Brahma, please become visible to my eyes. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
It's on? Sometimes we become a little fearful. You know, for all of us, the Lord has reciprocated in small ways, you know, depending on our efforts. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here if there was no reciprocation. So sometimes it feels, you know, that Krishna wants to reciprocate. They go, oh, I'm so low. You can't really be smiling at me. You can't really be. You know what I'm... So how to, as we're going along that process of becoming purified and wanting to open up to that love, to be able to receive that love so that it can increase. What, you know, sometimes we reject and we say, oh, maybe this is just Sahajiya and maybe he can't really be smiling at me. And, you know, it's funny what we go through on that path to try to begin to actually accept him as a person and that this really is a personal relationship we're having and wanting.
Well, in terms of establishing a personal relationship with someone, especially somebody who's non-material, that means that they're not material. they can't be quantified by us in the way we can quantify relationships with other people. It's a little perplexing because we can't judge Krishna as we would judge any ordinary dealings or exchange. So therefore, sometimes it seems as though it's easier not to think about him so much. just get on with things and maybe it will sort of happen. Or the tendency may be there to think, oh yes, Krishna's mercy is showing in some way or another, but something else in my life isn't Krishna's mercy. And so what my personal experience is, and Srila Prabhupada tells us this too, is that you have to find somebody to go towards Krishna with. If you go by yourself, it'll be a little bit awkward, just like if we both decided that we wanted to go to Delhi and visit the... Who's in charge of India? The Prime Minister? What is it? Yes, somebody like that. Or some movie star, somebody very prominent here in this culture. If we decided we wanted to go visit them, it wouldn't be very easy for us to get access to them, because why? Why should they meet us, and why? What have we got to offer to them? But if we knew somebody who knew them, it would be easy. So when trying to understand either underconfident of Krishna's exchanges with us, or in terms of sahaja, overconfident of Krishna's exchanges with us, it's very essential, actually, very essential that we go through Srila Prabhupada and we listen to him. And we listen to him a lot, because he wants to take us. He wants to take us to meet Krishna. And he wants to take everyone to meet Krishna. It's not as if he doesn't have that power. So the more I'm finding personally, the more I'm listening to him, the more confident I feel about the fact that Krishna is reciprocating with me, rather than thinking, oh, he can't reciprocate with me, he reciprocates with him. I'm actually able to stand in my own experience of Krishna in a way that is very reassuring and very healthy. So in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, very often it can be compared to be like the beginning of a birth. And when you see a young child is born, just naturally a young child first knows only the mother. And then the baby develops, as Prabhupada explains, develops a sense of love for the father, then society, then so on, then so forth. But it's not automatic that a jiva who doesn't have the association of somebody who knows Krishna, it's not automatic that they're going to come to the point of thinking, I should develop my loving propensity for him. They may stop somewhere in that orbit and not develop further. To develop further, to develop actually a deep sense of connection with Krishna, you have to meet a lover of Krishna. And then you have to listen to them. And then you have to try to follow them. And if you try to follow them, you're going to feel like a poor ignorant fool. Automatically. You can't help it, because you won't be able to follow them. They'll take big strides like a child, right? They'll take big footsteps. And there'll be big footsteps in the sand. And you sort of struggle with your little feet to kind of catch up to one footstep. So like that, we won't feel like, oh yes, I'm following and I now know everything. We'll feel like I'm following and I'm very little. My false ego is becoming littler. And my feeling of love for Krishna is becoming bigger. That's healthy. And if my false ego is becoming bigger, and my love for Krishna is not becoming bigger, then you have to reverse that. And the reversing process, Prabhupada says over and over again, is to hear. So it may not work right away. We may say, yes, I'm going to hear. And we go and we listen to something, and then the next minute we forget it. That may be there. That may be there many times. That may be there, like a child learning to walk. But this is the process. Stand up. Take a little step. And if a child just sits there and says, no, 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 I can't walk, then they're denying their own birthright. They have it within them. Prabhupada said, you can take a chair and you can walk the chair every day for 2 hours, backward and forwards across the room. But the chair will never learn to walk because it's not inherent within the chair. But it's inherent within the baby. It's inherent with us to love Krishna. But we have to go through somebody who already is fixed and firm, a samsayam, free from any doubt. And that gives us the greatest strength possible. And also allows us to feel like a fallen fool. Yes. Yeah. Anything else? So our greatest challenge is to gain realization of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. That's really the only challenge, actually. There isn't any other problem. Because if we had realization of Krishna, if Krishna was as near to me and real to me as Harinam is, and I can talk to her easily, then I can ask him what he wants. I'm his servant. Do you want me to do this? Do you want me to do that? How should we do this? Why are they doing that? Can we fix this? Should we do this first? Should we do that second? On and on. There's an intimate exchange would take place. But without that, I have an intimate exchange with my intelligence or my feelings. And my feelings aren't purified and neither is my intelligence any bigger than it is. So I can do my little best with it and that's good. But imagine if we were directly plugged into Krishna and he was saying, turn left, turn right. Like one of those, you know, those little things they put, I don't know if in India we have them in Australia where you put it in the car and it says, turn left, now turn right, and a little computer screen comes up and tells you how to get there. And even a fool can drive just following what the computer is saying. So even a fool can serve Krishna if we have realization. And we don't. So this is actually what we really need. Or I should say, I don't. You may all have realization, but I know I don't have realization. I'm trying to have realization and I'm happy with that, but I'll be much happier still when it occurs. And it happens gradually and in small stages. So it's not that suddenly, overnight, we become transformed. But this is our work. This is our dynamic work. And through this, we'll know what to do next to help everybody else. Any other thoughts? Questions? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.